This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 841, brought to you by iFanboy and listeners just like you.
Well, woman I love is her name Ramona. She kind of looks like Tempest Storm. She can dance like a little Egypt. She works down at the snake farm, it just sounds nasty, snake farm. Pretty much is snake farm. It's a reptile, snake farm.
Hey, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 841. I am Josh Flanagan, and thank dear God Almighty, it's Connor Kilpatrick. He's back.
I'm back. I've got grievances.
What kind of a vacation doesn't end with grievances?
I've listened to one of the three shows that happened while it's gone, only because I haven't finished reading all the books. Mm-hmm. You did a great job. I did want to point out for the listeners and the people at home that I didn't intend to miss three shows. I was on a 2-week vacation. I was going to two shows. There was a scheduling mishap with the show that James Viscardi ended up being on. I was not meant to be gone for 3 weeks. Just want to point that out.
No, that's my fault. That's totally. But it worked more like I was like, oh, I was a week ahead of time, which never happens. And B, I was like, you want to take the week off? Which never happens.
So anyway, I miss all you guys. I like doing the show, and I missed talking to you. I did get to see Josh in person, which we haven't seen each other in person since 2019, since before the pandemic.
Years. Yes.
Which is the longest we've not seen each other since we met in college over a generation ago.
Yeah.
And we did not get together to barbecue, which is what most people thought was happening in that photo.
I like that when people see that two friends have gotten together, it's about, well, what are you going to give us?
I would have loved if the barbecue show was unlocked. I would love to do a quarterly barbecue with Josh, but that was not the case. We were in the parking lot of an ice cream parlor.
That's true.
Wearing ship shirts. All right. Let's get on with the show. I'm excited. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is iFanboy every week. One of us picks the book they like the best. We call that the pick of the week. And we talk about other comics that came out this week. That's a fun time. There will be a patron pick. That's going to be a thing that happens. We will have listener mail or Linsner mail, which is
from Linsner. Thing.
Yeah, Linsner. Who can forget that famous Dutch painter?
great light. Great natural light.
There will be, wait, who's... Oh, that's Vermeer.
Yeah.
Oh, seriously, Vermeer's amazing. If you've never seen... God. What's the documentary? Paul's Vermeer?
I think so.
It's okay. About a guy who became obsessed with Vermeer and wanted to, like an artist who wanted to recreate Vermeer paintings like note for note. Oh, God, I loved that documentary. It made me so happy. If you haven't, it's one of the best. I love it. There's a spoiler warning. We will talk about what happened with Paul's Vermeer, although I don't remember.
We're now at Paul's Vermeer show.
Yep. It's, yeah.
Should probably find out if this is the right movie. You keep talking, I'm going to look it up.
I'm absolutely sure. There's my two favorite artistic, inspirational documentaries are Paul's Vermeer and Jodorowsky's Dune. Those are the two that like I got out, and I was like, oh, my God, art's amazing.
Paul's Vermeer. Tim's Vermeer.
Oh, I've mixed up standard white dad names.
Sorry.
Hey, Timmy. Hey, Paul. You catch the Sox last night?
All right.
So you had the pick.
I had the pick. You know, I thought at one point I had some sort of opening show, not rant, but monologue, but I don't remember. That was so long ago. I will say, you know, I'm still catching up from the last couple of weeks, and at a certain point, I had to stop reading because I didn't want to get those books confused in my brain with the books I had to talk about this week.
I understand that.
So I am still like 10 books back to catch up on everything. I think I missed like 30, you know, I think like 30 books came out that I was reading while the time I was gone. But
that's not that bad.
No, not terrible.
Are you sure? Because one of those weeks was San Diego week, and I had 30 books that week.
Oh, yeah, that. Well, you know, it might have been 40. It actually might have been 40 books, yeah. Those 3 weeks. That makes more sense. The San Diego week was really, really heavy. But this was a strange week. There was a ton of Image books. We're going to talk about them, or at least a good portion of them. There was not a lot out from Marvel. There was not a lot out from DC. It was a weird week, but I enjoyed reading. I enjoyed getting back in the flow of everything. So that was definitely fun. And the pick of the week ended up being DC versus Vampires number 8. And before we get to that, I want to mention that there was a house ad in DC this week for the final chapter of Deceased, and I was so fucking excited to see that. I didn't know it was coming.
There it is, yeah.
DC War of the Undead Gods, the final chapter of the Deceased franchise.
Because they did. They just left Superman out there in the sun. You can't end it when that's happening.
I fucking love that series. You fucking love that series. Listeners at home mostly love that series.
And it doesn't
I'm
matter.
I'm excited for
we're going to talk about it anyway.
It's honestly, it's one of my favorite comics that's come out in the last 5 years. Like, I thought about it. It's like, it's because it's related to this big leak, which is DC versus Vampires, which is, you know, a naked attempt to recapture what was a very popular comic in DC, surprisingly so, which is why there's been 3 volumes of it. So this is another sort of, you know, we've talked about the series before, but this is the first time it's been a pick of the week. It's another sort of out of continuity, big concept. This is, you know, that first one was DC versus Zombies. Now this is DC versus Vampires, and it says it right in the cover.
My question is, have you been reading this all along?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
See, I didn't know that, and I haven't. I read, I kind of saw it, and I brushed it off, and then at some point I noticed it again, and I went, oh, it's Matt Rosenberg. I should check that out. So I actually have read some of the specials, but I haven't been reading the main series. But the specials I read, even without reading the rest, were really good, surprisingly so.
Yeah, there was a fun one last week that I read. Was it Deathstroke with his team? I don't remember.
Yes. Yeah. I think I talked about that on the show.
Yeah, you did. Yes, I read it originally because, you know, I saw it as an attempt to do another DC, so I thought, well, let's check that out. Then I saw Otto Schmidt, who's an artist. He's one of my favorite new artists on the scene. Matthew Rosenberg and James Tinney in the fourth are the writers. I was like, well, this is all, like, top-level creative team. Even if I don't always love what Tinian does, he's still a top-level guy, and so is Rosenberg, and Otto Schmidt is great. So I was like, well, at least this is a good team on it. I'll check it out. And I've been enjoying it the whole way through in a way that, you know, I think it was coming out at the same time as Tom Taylor's Marvel one, Dark Ages. And I think the comparison was that Dark Ages was too short, whereas this seems to be just the right amount to really give us a fleshed out story. And what we have with issue 8, it's issue 8 of 12, is the end of Act 2. You know, so the vampires have, you know, done their damage in the DC universe. They've taken over most of the major players. You think at this point there's no chance because they've got Wonder Woman, they've got Superman's been taken out, Batman's dead, and the leader of the vampires, Nightwing, and there's just no chance because everybody who's left is basically street level or magic, and so what are they going to do? And here is we've seen a sort of gathering of the team story in that final bit of Act 2 where the good guys have now regrouped, and we have 3 separate strike forces going out at the end of this issue to attack the vampires, one of which is just Green Arrow on his own. But I love the look of the book. I think Otto Schmidt's a terrific artist. He has a style that's wholly unique. He gives, it's like a part cartoony, part realistic style. His characters all have
modern and recognizable hair and clothing, which is not something that artists always do, but it's very sketchy and frenetic and kinetic. And I like it a lot. He did that Hawkeye book we really loved. I don't know who's doing what in terms of writing. If I had to guess, I'd say Tinian and Rosenberg are plotting it and Rosenberg's writing it just because it feels like Rosenberg's dialogue, but maybe it's both. It's just fun and snappy and sexy. You get some sexy Green Arrow, Black Canary here, which we haven't seen in a while. This feels more like the old DCU than it does the new modern one, even if it's got modern elements in it. It's just a lot of fun. I'm just enjoying these out-of-continuity DC stories for the most part right now.
I mean, I think that you think that has something to do with the fact that, like, many of the mainstream DC stuff isn't really hitting with you the same way. And it's interesting that there's this sort of alternative that you have.
Yes. And also, I remember another point I had. It's been a long week. It's been a long week, and I've forgotten.
You're telling me? You're telling
me. In my head. You know, Josh will know this. When you're reading your books and you're doing a show like this, you've got to start making your points in your head, you know, while you're reading so you can remember them for the show. It used to be that we'd write a big review and they'd all be written out for us, but now we've got to remember them. My other point was, this is the same week that Dark Crisis came out, the next issue of Dark Crisis came out, and I don't know why I'm reading it because it's completely innocuous and anodyne, and I just don't care. But this book feels much more like an event than Dark Crisis does. This book feels like it's got weight and stakes. And it's not just because it's not a continuity, people can die, but it just feels like it's got a more epic feel to it than Dark Crisis, which feels very rote. And just like, we're doing this again, and with no aura of any kind of importance around it because it's not affecting any other book. No one's talking about it. It might as well not be existing. And this book is a self-contained mini-series and certainly not like super popular, but it feels when you're reading it like there's like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? Whereas Dark Crisis doesn't feel like that at all. So this just feels like this is a really fun universe-spanning adventure in the DC universe right now. And it's not something you get a lot anymore because events are kind of dead.
Is I'm not reading Dark Crisis, and I'm actually not reading the main series of this.
Mm-hmm.
I've downloaded them all, and I want to read them all, but I actually do want to read them. But say whatever you want about it. I'm not worried about that. I'm looking through it. But like, they're both going on at the same time, and I'm unaware of Dark Crisis. Like, when you said Dark Crisis, I went, what is that?
It's the third issue. We're three issues into it.
I know. But this, I'm aware of without even meaning to be. You know, I picked up like a random one-shot of it because I was like, well, let me check it out because I saw Matt Rosenberg's name. And, you know, you and I are not huge James Tinian fans, but we always give him credit where due. I think he's a little harder for me to love the work, but you know, there's talent, skill, blah blah blah, all that stuff. He's well known.
He's a pro.
Pretty well now. He's a pro, and he can do great stuff. I don't like everything he does, but he does good stuff that I do like. We're gonna talk about more of that later. But Rosenberg, man, I just feel like every time I read one of his books, like especially, I mean, We talked about What's the Furthest Place from Here a lot of times. Like, these DC books and those Marvel books, like, he just does a thing in a right way. And you're right about that. Like, it seems like his dialogue through here. And I don't know how to qualify that. Maybe I'm completely off or
wrong.
It's
just a feeling. Yeah.
But he has a way of doing things that is not... I can't put my finger on what it is. I can put my finger on what Brian Bendis does. But I can't put my finger on what Rosenberg does. But I know I really like it.
I mean, maybe it's because he's about our age. And so this sort of feels like...
Yeah,
a book that takes all the things we liked about comics and puts them together. I mean, this feels to me like when I was a kid and I would take all my toys and make a giant battle, you know, like the last battle of the superheroes. You get all the aspects of DC in here. John Constantine is a major player in all these books now, which is fine. But like, you know, everyone is in trouble, but Black Canary and Green Arrow still find time to reconnect and you know, have naked time, and Barbara's been glamored by Dick, so she's having these nightmares about him and Starfire together, but then Constantine shows up to her all bloodied and burned, and she's a major player in all this, and you know, the big chip they have is Supergirl, they're trying to hide her away from the vampires. Like, it feels like we're at that moment in the story where everything is shifting gears, and the heroes are going to get back onto their feet, because right now they've been really messed up, and it's just been fun. It's just been really fun, and it's a beautiful book. The colors, I want to mention, Otto Schmidt colors it with Pierluigi Casolino. I love that there's a little great use of reds. Red's the sort of dominant color in here in the backgrounds and all the blood. And it's just, it's a good looking book. It's a really good looking
book. It really
book.
Is beautiful. I'm looking through it and Schmidt has this, he seems to have a talent with having a very busy, not a good word for it, but a very full page with a lot of stuff in it. But then when he wants to have a scene that is quieter, like it just feels like he dials back the artwork. So if you've got this dream sequence or whatever with Dick and Starfire, there's a lot of negative space and emptiness, and the lines are a lot cleaner. There's just less to look at, but in a good way. And he's got the ability to have that dynamism. And the same thing with the pages with Ollie and
yep.
China. I almost said Mockingbird again. Almost said Mockingbird again. You know, those scenes where just the two people that are intimate, you know, the line work is incredibly minimal. It's exactly where it needs to be.
The backgrounds go away.
Yeah.
He does incredibly detailed backgrounds until they want us to focus just on the characters. And, you know, people often knock lack of backgrounds, and I've certainly done it in the past, but sometimes it's a tool. And here, the point is, so you're just focusing on the characters, and you're not concerned with what's happening around them.
It's just this nice little thing that, you know, a quality, competent artist will focus on things and use their tools. And it's a tool that I feel like artists sort of do one thing or the other. And in here, he's doing both. And I think that's a very sophisticated way to make comics.
Yeah. This is, I've been enjoying this. In the beginning, I was like, okay, it's like a lightweight deceased. But as it's gotten further and further into it, it's been fun. They've taken interesting turns on it. There's a big old battle in the middle where Jan from the Wonder Twins shows to be, you know, very powerful. And then the last page is this great triptych of the three teams walking towards you, or at least two of them are walking towards you. One of them is floating towards you, but you know, we're entering now the final battle, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
I just want to say that you are a man who is middle-aged. We complain about our inability to remember things. You just heard me stumble there, as I wanted to say, but you've used the word anodyne and triptych in this conversation, and you just tossed them out. And if nobody else says that they appreciate that about you, I want you to know that I do.
Well, thank you.
Those are good words. In fact, I had to be like, I'm not entirely sure what the definition of anodyne is. And that upset me, but in a good way. You know, like,
I'm here for you, Josh.
That's not a word that I would use, and I want to. And I'm, you know, I'm a person, I've been in many business meetings where people have looked at me like, what did you just say? I was like, I'm sorry. This is how I talk. So, you know, well done.
I was hoping that this would end before Deceased started again, because you don't want to compare the two, but it looks like Deceased starts this month, so.
Yeah.
I'm excited for it. Look, I had fun reading comics. There were some really good books. We're about to talk about them, but at the end of the day, I was most excited to read the next issue of DC vs. Vampires, a book that I've been enjoying the whole time. And those side issues you've been talking about, I've also been reading them, and they've been fun too. So we've got, you know, it's a fun sexy time we're having.
That last one with Deathstroke and the other people who were in it, Azrael,
yeah.
Yeah. That issue was so good. And I just read it all on its own. It didn't mean a damn thing. It was great.
That means it did its job.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, it makes you go back and read the other issues that came before it, then it really did its job. That takes a skill to sort of be able to just throw you into a thing and be able to enjoy it. A book that you can't do that with is Batman Killing Time, the sixth and final issue, came out this week. I thought this was fantastic. This could have been my pick of the week.
I had a revelation real reading it.
Go on.
This week also, Batman 126 came out, which is Chip Zdarsky's second issue. The last issue was pick of the week, and I enjoyed it. But I was thinking about it, and I finished reading Batman, then I read Killing Time, I read them back to back, and I thought, why did I enjoy Killing Time so much more? And I think it's because the story was smaller, even though which is crazy to say because it spanned thousands of years, but I feel like since the New 52 launched in 2011, every arc of Batman has been important.
This will change everything.
Every arc is 6 to 12 issues, and it's always like Batman's world gets rocked in that arc, and
it's Snyderism.
Everything he thought he knew is wrong, or changes, or something important. And it's like and we're gonna talk about that with the next issue of Iron Man too. I felt like Iron Man was like, this is just a fun little small Iron Man story. Just tell me a fun little small Batman story. I don't want his whole world to rock. I don't want everything he knows to change every single six issues. It becomes exhausting, which is funny to say about reading a comic, but it just becomes mentally exhausting after a while. Everything feels heavy, whereas this felt light and fun.
That's Scott Snyderification. And it isn't to say anything against him. That was his job and he did it and it was great. But then that became the norm after that. And you're right, it is exhausting. I think you're really onto something. And Iron Man that we are going to talk about of this is probably even a better example of it.
Yeah.
Either way, so as we get to this, this story started off feeling very complicated. Mm-hmm. And there was going back and forth in time and whatever, and they weren't telling you what was going on. And I think the thing that impressed me most about this issue is that I understood it completely by the end. I went, yeah. Oh, I get it. I did have to go back and be like, wait, what happened? Because one of the scenes, basically the object that they are all hunting and going after and whatever, it has a resolution in this, but it's told at different places through the issue. So I had to go back and be like, wait, how did that work? And I found it and I went, oh, okay, I understand. So you kind of have to put, but it wasn't in an annoying way. It just was good. But I think the thing that just really impressed me, like this level of plotting and structure, I can't even imagine it. The art that really impresses me is when I read something or hear something, I go, I have no idea how one could do this. And that's right. How this felt. But in a way that it's not because it was complicated. It's because it was intricate and beautiful and kind of perfect. And
Tom King's thing is structure. And he did it. This is a really good example of it working really well.
Yeah.
And you're right. In the beginning, a lot of people were like, what the fuck is happening? I dug it. I dug the weird Watchmen-esque style of captioning all the scenes. But then we talked about this last time. Once it was revealed that Clock King was in charge of everything, it's like, oh. And then all this, it's like that moment in the movie where all the pieces lock into place. It's the moment where Kaiser Soze is revealed. Like, it's like, oh, okay, everything that's been happening now makes sense.
I did it 35 minutes ago.
Right. Dave Marquez, we've been talking about him for years. He's terrific. There's a great scene where Catwoman fights the Help. Not the Help. Is that the Help?
Yeah.
There's.
Yes, the Help. And Clock King doesn't not look like the Help.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they kind of have similar builds and outfits.
That's true. I did like that the thing they were all chasing, the Eye of God, was just it's been a MacGuffin the whole time, but here that we find out what it is, it's nothing. It's a symbol. It's a piece of a stone statue. It's the eye from the statue. It doesn't hold any mystical powers. It's almost like, you know, throughout history, you've had tyrants who imbue regular objects with mythical power, you know, to use this hold over the people. And this kind of, it's just what it is. It's just a stone eye. It doesn't mean anything. I like that.
Another thing I really liked, the way that Clock King is narrating it, and it actually works in this instance, it's not, because it's not like the captions and narration are not like that self, you know, like, I was here and this and here's what I'm thinking or whatever. It isn't that. It's a narration that makes...
Yeah, it's not first-person narration.
But it's a narration that makes sense. But he jumps into the helicopter, and they're describing what happens. The art is showing it in a way that works together but not against each other and really great. And describes what happened. Like, the action scenes are fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, the helicopter goes up in the air. It explodes. Hear how he jumps out. Clock King takes the motorcycle. And that you're jumping in time a little here and there. And there's a bit here. It's like super classic Batman. Is that he reaches in to empty his belt of knockout gas pellets. Mm-hmm. And he has 150 of them. And he drops them at just the right level. So it makes everybody pass out. There's this huge action scene. And then as we get down to page 15... It's just Batman, like, in a field with gas all around, and he's going around trying to find who's dead and if there's anybody he can save. And
I love that scene.
They show him doing CPR.
You desperately resuscitate anybody who's left from that giant battle where you and I got murdered by each other.
So good.
I mean, that was such a classic. You're right. It's like, in the midst of all this, he's going to try to resuscitate who he can in this giant battlefield of dead bodies. I thought that was a beautifully drawn scene too, as the camera pulls in on him
and colored all of it. And then at the same time, they're like, when's the last time you saw like a cool Batman utility belt thing? They didn't even do it anymore. When I was a kid, it was all about the utility belt.
Right.
That was the centerpiece of the book.
True.
Was what was in that damn belt. And he had that happen. And then finally, because there's things worth talking about here, is there's the scene where Clock King and Batman, this feels very Tom Kingy to me, is that the bad guy and the good guy are sitting there, which is Alan Moore, quite honestly, if we're going back to Killing Joke, and they're talking, and Clock King is just going off about some bullshit, Batman just elbows him in the face, and it's a beautiful sequence, one of my favorite types of comic book pages. Like, that's a page worth buying. I'm sure it's digital and you couldn't, but it's just...
I laughed.
Right, like, oh, this guy is insufferable.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know.
This was the runner-up, the pick of the week. This is one of my favorite Batman books that's come out in a while. One of my favorite Batman stories. It's big and small and intimate and large and...
It turned out not to be big. Like, the world-ending aspect of it was... You said it was MacGuffin. It's bullshit, another good word. I say bullshit, you say MacGuffin.
Well, yeah. It also, like, there's a one-page scene where he goes to talk to Ra's al Ghul, and they have a sword fight. Like, it felt very much like, again, a guy close to our age doing all the classic elements from the sort of the Bronze Age Batman.
Mm-hmm.
It's a six-issue Batman story. It's not trying to change his world. It's just a story about, Catwoman and Riddler trying to steal something. Yes, look, was this book originally a attempt to capitalize off the film featuring all the film characters? Yes, but they told a really compelling Batman story through it.
Yeah. Didn't even occur to me.
Yeah.
I also didn't finish the movie. So it was great. It was so good. And it's one of those things, like, at first I was like, I like this, you know? And then in the middle I was like, I think this is pretty good. And then by the, like, you know, it takes patience. It takes, you know, trust in the creators that it's going to come together. And when it does, you just feel, I'm so glad I spent my time with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Iron Man 22, Christopher Cantwell on Angel Unzueta. And that is another book that, it just feels like they're telling a fun Iron Man story. It's not, you know, the last storyline with this creative team, or at least Christopher Cantwell, was the very long story having to deal with that dude.
Tony becomes a god.
Yeah.
Korvac, Michael Korvac.
Yeah. And I enjoyed it, but it was also,
yeah,
it was very long and very, you know, big. And this is just, there's an underground marketplace selling like the biggest weapons in the Marvel Universe, or the most dangerous weapons in the Marvel Universe, and Tony and Rhodey are going to break it up. And that's all it is, and I really enjoyed it.
And it's interesting because, first of all, this is the first book I read this week, and when I finished, I was so happy. It's exactly the reason, I pinned it right away. I was like, oh, it's just an Iron Man story. And I feel like this is going to be a theme we're going to keep coming back to. But it was just like, oh, we can be done with this in two or three issues, and it's a problem, and the buddies get together, and they have to fix it, and there's a shady guy from the past who comes in to help. And it was great. And it is a small story, but like the stakes are enormous.
Yeah.
Like it's like these bad guys have all the worst possible weapons that anybody in Marvel, that Jack Kirby could ever think of.
And Tony even gets gassed with the gas that killed Captain Marvel in the 70s. So yeah. In 1980.
It was melodramatic.
We go through waves on this show where it's like we enjoy something for a while, but then it gets overdone and we're sick of it. We want something new. And I think right now you and I might be in the same place where it's like, just tell me a small, fun story featuring the characters. You don't have to rock their world every time.
Right, and let them be the characters.
Yeah, like, I'm just enjoying those smaller ones.
Don't make, you know, Tony an amputee who can't get to his costume.
Right.
Just put him in his suit with his other friend in his suit and let him do suit shit.
Right.
And like, there was also a couple of things in here, like the tone, which I like Chris Cantwell. I've said that many times, many things he's done that I like. But there's a tone to this. Well, first of all, I don't dislike Tony Stark in this book, and that's not nothing.
Right.
Because I don't like him in a lot of books anymore. But there's a bit where Titanium Man, who's ridiculous, comes through, and Tony just looks up and he goes, ah, cripes. And I was like, I want more cripes in my comics. I want that kind of thing. You know, it's just, there was banter. There's a punch. There's a scene where he's fighting him, where basically, you know, their suits are all matched, and he's like, "Yeah, but you don't know how to do this." And he's the John Wayne haymaker and the Steve Rogers roundhouse. I was like, "There you go, just have some punching."
Yeah.
And it was just silly enough and just overarching enough, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. I really did, and this was just a good issue of a mainstream comic book. And it's shocking how often we don't see that.
Yeah, you know, when we were kids, you had those big, important stories, but you also had a lot of stories that were just fun, you know?
It brings up the question, like, why is that Killing Time story? Why isn't a story like that never just part of the Batman series?
Yeah, I don't know.
You're in five, you're out, like, you know, this isn't just the normal Iron Man series, but it actually felt so self-contained that I find myself thinking, was this like a one-shot? Was this not related to it? Because they just don't do it like that.
Right.
And we've talked about it. That you know, comics have that illusion of change, and they keep it going like a soap opera or whatever. But it's almost like we've taken that to an extreme.
Well, you know, it all happened with the trades.
Yes.
And, you know, if you go back in the show, we were big proponents of that format. But when you had to write six-issue arcs, and they had to, you know, be compelling enough to sell a collected edition, and it's harder to have Spider-Man punching a burglar.
And that is also why, like, killing time actually doesn't work in the series, because you would never have time to conceive that plot if you were
doing
having to do a script twice. No, bi-weekly.
Oh, yeah. I forget.
You know, I think that has a lot to do with that feeling of like, you just keep going, all right, I got to do another one. I know where it's going to end. I know, you know, but it's got to keep going and it's got to be epic. And so you're just always piling on steaks and steaks and steaks and it never stops. That sounds like a delicious meal.
And normally, Josh and I love when you pile on steaks.
Yeah.
Especially that one time where I was visiting Josh. We were in our 20s going to Comic-Con, and I'd come to LA to visit Josh. He was living in LA at the time, and I was in New York. And we had bought too many steaks, you know, early in the week to make for dinner. And so Josh was like, we have these four steaks. Should we just eat them for breakfast before we go to Comic-Con? And I was like, sure. So we had two steaks each for breakfast and then drove to San Diego. Even in our 20s, that was a mistake.
Yeah, a mistake.
We would both die now. Like,
that's what I was thinking.
They'd find us by the side of the road.
Like, I was like, the problems I would have after that. First thing in the morning. Like, it wouldn't even be. But not only that, I can't even afford steaks anymore. So
I'm actually very excited to talk to you about the Scumbag 14, the final issue, which I was surprised by. Because I got to the end of this issue and I thought, oh, people are going to hate this. But I love it. Roland Bashi is the artist on it, and this is the final issue of a series we've really enjoyed from Rick Remender. Yep. And this is one of those issues where, before we get to the ending, where, listen, we've been following Rick's career pretty closely for the last, you know, 12 or so years. And lately, he has been using his comics as soapboxes for how he feels about the world.
I don't think lately. I think this is a thing. We talked about this before.
But he's been more naked about it. This is a pretty nakedly.
Like, Rick Remender is in his comics. Like, this isn't a guy who's trying to hide himself in it. He is inserting his spirit, his essence is in all of his comics. And it works to his benefit most of the time, to his credit. But yeah, it's pretty on the nose here.
Here he has the Scumbag character basically yelling at both sides, the super liberals and the super conservatives who are fighting their war, like a literal war in the city, about how they're both wrong. They're both, you know, gone too far. And it's totally, you can see Rick's anxiety about the world, you know, on each page of here. And then the big twist is at the end, we find out that this entire series has been a hallucination, as in the very first issue, the Scumbag was ODing. And here he's continuing to OD. We find out that everything has been happening in his brain as he dies.
It's Hill Street Blues.
Saint Elsewhere. Characters from the book are the paramedics and people around him trying to save him. It was actually a very sad-ish, you know, ending, because he says, you know, did I do it? Did I save the world? And the paramedic, who was also his secret agent partner, says, you did it. You saved everyone. We're so grateful. And fucking A, man. And dies. And so, like, people who don't like those kind of endings, I thought, we will hate this book. But I really liked it. I think, because the whole book was silly and ridiculous as it was.
It was. And I think the bit in the middle where he's like, I'll fix this. And he gives his speech, and everybody listens to him like they're reasonable.
Yeah.
And they're like, my God, he's right. And I was like, this is weird.
they throw down their guns. They start making out in the street. And
it's cathartic, you know, in a way. And he does say all those things. And when you're saying people, I think the thing that most people are going to hate is that he throws, I don't think many of the younger comic readership are necessarily going to appreciate the fact that he's laying blame equally on both sides of a political divide. And that is a conversation to be had many times. But I think if you're talking about extremism on either side,
for sure.
You know, I won't specify, but let's say one side kind of comes off as evil and then one side comes off as extremely annoying. And, you know, like he's saying, you're both awful. And, you know, there's some sense to that. And I, you know, this is a book written by a, you know, 50-year-old man, more or less, and I think that has something to do with it.
This is not this week, but you're not reading Deadly Class anymore, right?
No.
I think it was last week when it came out, where the main character, we jumped into the future so much, he's older, and he's a writer. He sells a TV series, and he becomes the showrunner.
Jesus.
I think you should read it. The entire issue is his angst at being a showrunner. And I was like, Jesus, Rick. Like, just... These are not supposed to be autobiographies.
You couldn't, but it is. I mean, like, Deadly Class is an autobiography. I mean, it's very amped up or whatever.
For sure, that one is, yeah.
Like, his fucking stories about his youth are terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is a correct ending. I wasn't sure what I thought about it at first, but it makes sense. By the way, he has a lady thong on. Why does he have his pants off and his around his ankle? I don't remember what
happened. I don't remember what happened in the first issue. I remember being in the alley. It's instead of being shot by the weapon that gives him the superpowers, he's actually just dying from his shot. I knew something was up when his partner started to have sex with him. I was like, wait a minute.
Right.
This
is such a Vertigo book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the length, the way that it went, the voice, the way it looks. It's like, this is a Vertigo book, and I miss Vertigo.
It's true.
Like real Vertigo.
The old days of Scalped.
Yeah, it was great. What a great.
And that was even late Vertigo.
There's only 14 issues. I feel like it's 50 issues. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but I just looked. I was like, really? It was only 14? That's kind of amazing.
And that's the first issue of 5 Image books we're about to talk about after this print.
I love this cover. I love this cover. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Let's talk about how people can help the show, Josh. While we take a break, we'll talk about more Image books. One of these is Dark Horse. I forgot. So there'll be 4 Image books in a Dark Horse book.
If you like the show, you can get to patreon.com/ifanboy, where you can directly support the show. We unlock shows for everybody, your splodes, your media, your talk, your book, these sorts of things. You can become part of a great community over on Facebook. There's one, from what I hear. And Discord. We do not have a LinkedIn community. Thinking of starting it, we can all talk about our career goals and what we think the ideal workplace should be in the context of today's comics. Our next stretch goal is unknown. We are going to be switching those up. We need to put a meeting on the books, Connor, is what we need to do.
We had one on the books, and I took a vacation. Now we'll put it back on the books.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. And I will resent that you put a meeting on the books. It's not your fault. It's just what I do.
What else have you got to do?
Ouch. ifanboy.threadless.com. follow my social media for what's going on with that. Yeah. ifanboy.threadless.com. There are 12 designs on t-shirts and more, including our newest design, the Gosh Good Old Superheroes. I just keep saying, like, I love what we have put out in the world with this stuff. I'm so proud of it. It's not lame, and they're good. And I like that we took time and like shot everything down until we got to stuff we liked. I'm proud of that. You can go to ifanboy.com/support, where you can find direct donations via PayPal, ifanboy.com/Amazon, where there are links to buy the books and music from the show, all that stuff. Bookshop.org is the place we have partnered with to help you would order books, and they would come from local bookstores, real places where folks are selling books, which are so important to our society and culture. You probably have no idea, but I understand, sort of. We will put those links in where appropriate.
Well, the great thing about bookshop.org is you can assign your money to a certain bookstore or to the pool that they share, and I have it assigned to a certain bookstore, and I was able to go in person over vacation and buy a bunch of books.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
I recommend Print, a bookstore in Portland, Maine, co-owned by a former iFanboy contributor and good friend of mine, Josh Christie. Great store. I've been in there. I love that place. So he's an old bookseller veteran now. I don't even know if they're on there, quite honestly. You could just order from them directly if you wanted to. That's a free plug for my pal, who I haven't seen in years either.
Thanks to everyone who supports the show. Sometimes more important than ever to support the show. You know, no one's getting rich off the show, but we are spending a lot of time on it. So this helps make up for that time. And it helps, you know, helps us out when we're in a pinch. So, yeah. You know, thank you to everyone who does that. We do appreciate it. Stillwater.
Yeah, Stillwater 14. This had plot development and things changed and it stepped us forward, but in a little part of me thought about like, oh, it's not going to end for longer now.
Well, I think they announced the ending. It's not that too far off.
Right.
But two things about, yes, this was a big issue because this is the town of immortal people. The secret immortal town has annexed the town next door.
Because they drew larger borders on the map.
Yeah, they want more stuff. Some people want more people to have sex with because they're getting bored of the people in the town. But there was a point where, like, at the end, people showed up, and I was like, I don't know who these people are. Am I supposed to know who these people are? It's hard to keep track sometimes, books like this, over a monthly period, because there's so much coming at you, and they're not wearing costumes. So I was like, wait, who's the dude with the beard? Do I know that guy?
I think I managed to understand something about this.
Like, who are the three? I don't remember.
I think I understood something about this series with this issue, and is basically exactly what you're saying is like, I don't actually know any of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand. Like, I know who the boy is who took over, you know, and he's the little kid who's actually 46, you know, who's now the mayor in charge of the town. And for a little while, you weren't sure if he was evil or not. And actually, one thing I think is interesting about the book is that characters aren't necessarily evil. Like, you've seen this kid being evil, but you've also seen him being sort of, you know, respectable. You know, like it goes either way and you can't pin him down, which mm-hmm. sort of makes sense if you lived in this situation. I actually buy that. But I don't really know any of them. And therefore, I don't really care about any of them. Like there was the guy and his mother who sort of started off the whole thing. And yep. I thought maybe they'll be the emotional linchpin. But I don't really remember where they are or what they're doing.
It's almost like the town is the main character and not the characters. Yes. I just looked. We're in the middle of the final arc.
Okay.
This is the final arc. I think it ends with issue 19 or 20.
I think that is the flaw of the series is that I'm not hooked on anybody's story. You know, say what you will, but, you know, Walking Dead, you know, and this is sort of a version of that type of story, mm-hmm. had a person, you know, you could always hang your hat on, and it had others, and you knew all those characters really well, and I don't know these characters really well, and I think that is a flaw.
It's more of the high concept is the selling point. Like I want to mm-hmm. find out what's going to happen next with this town,
right?
As opposed to any of the people, specifically.
But it's not personal, and that's I think a weakness.
I really do enjoy it, and when it comes out, I'm excited to read the next issue. I thought there was a great scene in this with the lady in the diner with the kid. First of all, I realized that was
a wonderful scene.
If we'd been living in this town, Josh, we would be this kid because I think they said time stopped in like 1985 or something.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, shit, we would be 9 years old. Forever.
Ugh. 8.
Or whatever it is, yeah. But, you know, he loved this burger, and he would sneak out of town to go get this burger, and that's part of why he annexed the town. And she was like, you know, why you like the burgers? Because you felt, when you left your town, you felt tired and you felt hungry, which is feelings you didn't feel in your town. So the burger tasted better because of that. And now that you've taken this town over, that burger's not going to taste that good anymore. And I was like, fuck.
That's a smart diner counter lady.
Yeah. Well, she's old. She's seen the world. She's seen a lot.
That's true.
But I thought that was a smart, just sort of, you know, observation about why you enjoy things, why things are good when they have been earned.
Yeah. Well, that was a great, 2-3-page sequence.
Yeah.
It really was. Yeah, it stuck out. Also from Image this week was a book called Golden Rage, #1. I had no idea what it was. I picked it up because I saw it was a #1, which is what I always do when I see a #1 from any of these people. I say, is this something I could get into? And I flipped through it a little bit, and I thought, all right, let's give it a shot. I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. It is a weird story about this island where women postmenopausal women are shipped off to because they're no longer of use to society. That is pretty much as much explanation as it is. And they're all savage, evil bastards on the island. And so when you show up there, it's really dangerous. And there's these little cabals and you know, groups of people that got together to protect each other. And this younger woman gets there. I just gave away the reveal, by the way. Mm-hmm. They were like, you had early menopause? And she's like, yeah. And that's why she's there. And they kind of talk about it. And it's this, you know, society of women. You know, who are trapped in this place for some reason that we don't understand because they're no longer able to breed, I guess.
Savage grandmas.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty good. Like, I think the art was strong. I think the plot in laying out where we were was really strong. It, you know, at first you have the mystery, but by the end I was like, okay, I know where we are. I know what's going on. I understand this main character's, you know, trepidation. You know, at one point, you know, these people are being nice to her, but it's also kind of scary and she's not sure what's going on. And she holds a weapon to the throat of the old nice grandma who's, you know, Sophia from Golden Girls, basically. You know, I've never read anything like this. It was, or at least not from this perspective.
Sure, I get that. I didn't like this at all, but mm-hmm. I see what you're saying. It is totally unique.
Yep.
But I just didn't like the art. I didn't think the story was very strong. I thought the metaphor was what it was, but
I want to know where they're going with it. I want to know if there's going to be something beyond just this obvious thing that they're saying, because there's a lot of stories that deal with social issues that don't make it that far.
Mm-hmm.
They present the social issue up front, and you go, oh, that's terrible. And then there's no sort of resolution or thought about it. And I want this to have that. I want to know what you actually have to say about this. And right. I want it to be something illuminating. And it doesn't always happen, but I'm open for the... I mean, like, you know what I'm saying. Like, it's like, we're going to introduce a diverse character. And then it's like, well, now what? You know, that doesn't get you where you really want to be.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I get the metaphor that women are only valued for their sexuality. When their sexuality is out, then there's no value. But I don't necessarily think that's true. But
no, but that's how they feel. Whatever. There's different kinds of value. Also, I like the art. I have a problem with that. I like the way that it was colored and it has this sort of I don't know, Raphael Albuquerque kind of deal going on.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. I was like, all right, that was something interesting.
Sneak a Dark Horse book in my image block.
I'm sorry about that.
That's my own fault.
Frankenstein New World number one by, it's right, Mac Mignola, Christopher Golden, and Thomas Snigowski. I don't ever know how to say that name. With art by Peter Bergting, who I love. I don't see his stuff enough. European artist. I pretty much always will read a Mike Mignola number one.
Sure.
I will pretty much just always read it. Largely because I just kind of know what to expect. It's like a Usagi Yojimbo. Like, you know what you're going to get. And it's a good thing. What was rad about this is that... I'm going to spoil it. The reveal is that this is the world... way after BPRD ends and the monsters take over.
Oh, interesting.
And so I thought this was just a Frankenstein story, and then I was kind of reminded, I was like, I think Frankenstein was involved with the BPRD and Hellboy, and I was trying to remember that. And so you come in, and there's this underground society, and they have a artificial sun or something like that, and their oracle is this mysterious figure, and they've come up with this whole religion and culture around it, and this little girl's like, I need to go talk to that oracle. And you turned out that is, and nobody wants to go near him because he's sacred and whatever. And it turns out to be Frankenstein, and he wakes up and he's like, oh, I gotta go take care of some stuff, you know. And he goes to the surface world, and you're like, oh, this is where shit went down at the end of BPRD. Like, this is what's left of the world. This group of people went underground and created a society. There was, and I don't remember the details about it, but there was a sword in BPRD. And it had like two, it was like wide and then had two little tips that curve out at the end. And it was like the super powerful sword. And I think a couple of different characters had it, and they'd had it all through history. And Frankenstein finds that sword. And I was like, oh shit, that's cool. And it doesn't say BPRD on it, as far as I can tell.
This is a and deep I liked cut that. For the fans.
I mean, yeah. I mean, good luck with them from a marketing standpoint, I guess. But it actually says at the top, this is from the world of Hellboy, Frankenstein, New World. Go. But I didn't catch that. I thought that was great. And again, I haven't read BPRD in forever. I know I finished it when it ended.
Didn't it all end with some sort of like Ragnarokian situation where everybody died?
Yeah, basically. Like the monsters took over the world. That's the thing that they were fighting all the time. They failed. And the monsters took over the world and it sucked, you know. And then we just jumped way forward in time and we're seeing it here. And it was great. I was so happy about that continuity I wasn't expecting.
You know who's not getting credit is Mike Mignola. Because he should be talked about amongst like Cerebus and Bone and Strangers in Paradise in terms of, I mean, look, these are not totally in the Dark Horse is a major publisher, but like he's done this like multi-decade story run in this world.
I mean, if you want to be a comic creator, you should go, that's a career I want.
Yeah.
Like this guy has the best career.
Oh, for sure. But he's taken this, these characters in this world created what was in the early 90s. And, you know, he's still going with it. Here we are in 2022, and he's found another phase of it. It's an epic story when you lay it all out. And yeah. He gets credit for pieces, but he doesn't get credit for the entire thing that he's been doing here, which is a, like, 30-year story.
Yeah. And I think it's because impressive. The work is so understated.
Mm-hmm.
It's so understated. Like, even the stuff that is like this big world-ending stuff, you I don't know, you just kind of absorb it, and he can do little stories, he can do whatever, you know. BPRD was fantastic, but I'd be hard pressed to give you specific moments about it. But I enjoyed every bit of it. I don't know. It's you're right. Like he's a legend. I've talked about this. Like he's the one guy who I was like, I don't want to interview him. I don't want to talk to that guy. And it's just because I want him to be a concept in my mind more than I want him to be a real person.
Right.
And I'm keeping that one for myself. That's the way I always described it. You know, and
taking this one back.
I like meeting people and knowing them. I like, you know, and it's sometimes it affects how you read it and sometimes it doesn't. Like knowing Tom King does not affect how I read his stories. It doesn't. Right. I don't know why. You know, I don't know Rick Remender anymore, but we knew him at one time. And like, I'm like, there's that guy, you know, like, and that's fine or whatever. But Mike Mignola, I want him to be at least somewhat of an enigma. I don't want to know he's a regular person. I'm pretty sure he's a regular person. Like when I met Walt Simonson for the first time, I was like, oh my God, he's so a regular person. Yeah. And like a great person. Don't get me wrong. But I don't not like knowing that, but I'm going to keep Mignola. That's my story.
The Closet number 3, the final issue of The Closet, James Tinney IV and Gavin Fullerton. And I really like this.
Yes.
if this was like a 10-page prose short story, this is basically what it is. It's like a it's a short story. It's very on the nose about the metaphor, but it worked in this scenario, and I liked it.
I think that the thing is that what I think was brilliant, and I'm going to use that word, is that at first the metaphor was fairly obvious, but I thought this is comics, so it's not going to be a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you see the monster, it shows up, and you think, ugh, this is going to turn into the real thing. Like they're all, and that's the genius of the story, is that the whole time this guy is discounting this monster, and you are thinking this is a real monster.
Right,
it's, and this monster's going to show up, and it's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the end of it, they're like, this is absolutely a metaphor. But also, it is no less real or scary because of that.
Yeah, and traumatic. I mean, the...
Yes.
We talk about every issue of this series. It's about the father and his son. The son, there's a monster in the closet that keeps coming to terrorize the son, and it's been causing strife in their marriage, and the husband's pretty awful. And here we get more of a breakdown of, you know, he cheated on his wife. He was a stay-at-home dad, and his wife's high-powered, and he cheated on her with one of the babies, you know, one of the nannies in the park. And he... kept her. She was young, so she made him mixtapes and wrote him letters and Polaroids. This clearly takes place in the 90s or something.
He's Kevin Spacey. Not really. I meant the character from American Beauty. Sorry.
He kept a box full of her stuff in his son's closet, which is an asshole move. And his constantly going to check on it became the monster in the closet. He looked like the silhouette of the monster. And then the monster becomes a personification of the trouble in the marriage and the stress,
instability of the home,
and the stress and the anger and the angst in the house, and it just ends in a horrible, like, it's just a sad note. It ends terribly. Like, they get to Portland and nothing has changed. They get in a giant silent argument because we don't really know or care. It doesn't matter what they're fighting about. I mean, we know what they're fighting about, but it doesn't matter. The words they're saying doesn't matter, because to the kid it's all the same. And so he goes back to the closet, and as the creepy hand opens the door and the book ends, I thought it was really good.
And I think we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, we mentioned James Tynion earlier, and I have to give, like, I think when Nice House on the Lake was good, and then it was intriguing more than it was good, and then I was like, I tried, I hung on for a long time, but it was just too much. It was just too much.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the opposite of that. You know, it's three issues in and out. We actually spend most of the time with the dad.
Yep.
And you see it from his perspective, so you spend most of the story thinking he's trying, but he's got the. And then by the end of this, you're just like, he's awful.
Yeah.
And he's not willing to admit that it's his fault. It's his complicity. And, you know, there's probably an interpretation of this by somebody reading, like, why is it always going to be the dad? But, like, you know, this is not an unreal character. This is a real thing. This happens. We all have been affected by it, either directly or indirectly in our lives, you know, of a certain age anyway. You know, and it shouldn't work in comic book form. I really don't think it should. It's mostly this guy standing around whining. The sage older black man with cancer shows up in this one to talk to him. You know, like, it's such a stereotype.
But it worked.
It did work. And I think that the one thing that we haven't done is given enough credit to Gavin Fullerton and Chris O'Halloran on art and colors, is that the acting in this thing is spectacular. And every time you see that little boy, it fucking breaks your heart. It is crushing. You know, as a dad...
Well, there was the one scene where the monster's on his chest choking him, and I was like, fuck, that's a really visceral
and like the
interpretation of the crushing weight of what's happening in the house. That's
and the
kid
is just sad and scared. Yeah. He's four.
Yeah.
And the dad is resentful of the fact that the kid's hurt, and you're the one hurting the kid.
Yeah.
And I just, like, that cuts me to the quick. It was really well done. And so, you know, all the credit to the team who did this. It was just enough.
And thanks to the patrons, because it was the patron pick. We weren't going to read it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad we did. So thank you.
I think I read it anyway, but
maybe you probably did because it was number one, but I wasn't going to read it. We did. And so that's a good segue to the patron pick. Every week, the patrons of the show at patreon.com/ifanboy get to vote to add a book to the rundown. And so sometimes books like that sneak in and we love them, and sometimes they don't. It's a gamble. This week, the winner by a wide margin, The New Champion of Shazam, number one, from DC Comics, written by Josie Campbell, with art by Evan Doc Shaner and letters by Becca Carey. It's a four-issue miniseries about Mary Marvel, I guess her name is, Mary Shazam. These characters have no fucking names. I haven't been following the adventures of Billy Batson. He's been, I guess, over in Titans Academy is where he's been, I guess. Apparently, he is trapped in the Rock of Eternity. The Shazam family no longer has all the powers, all the characters from the movie that they brought to the comics. So now all of the power of Shazam is no longer broken up between eight people. It's now all in Mary as she goes off to college. A Vassar, I think.
Yeah.
On our first day. This is beautiful. We love Doc Shaner. I thought the issue was just fine overall, though.
Four was the patron pick. I hadn't really noticed where we were with that. I kind of went back and forth. I was going to read it. And I looked and I was like, I don't know the name Josie Campbell. And that sometimes will make me not read a book, which is wrong. I'm sorry. And then I saw Doc Shaner had drawn it. And I was like, why didn't I know about this? And so that was the first thing that made me grab it. My take on the issue was, and I'm trying to look up as I can, it should be harder to find what she wrote, or should be easier to find.
I think she's a comedian.
She is, but I don't know. I feel like she's done comics before.
Yeah.
She did Wonder Woman, Black and Gold. She did Future State. I really didn't like the first bit of it, which was she goes to her dorm room, and there's these two girls, and she's like, these girls are amazing. And I was like, these girls are annoying. I was like, that's your take on this? And I get it. Like, the theme, the concept of this girl who just wants to live her life, you know, without having the power of a god and being part of a thing and being, she's a foster kid and just all this stuff. I get it. I understood it. I think it was wrought a little silly. Like, it was a little, like, over.
Well, you know, I was going to say small town, but she's from Philadelphia, but she's, you know, a foster kid who has spent her formative years taking care of this family of foster kids. Mm-hmm. And she goes to college, and one roommate's from New York and one's from L.A., and they seem really cool to her. And I get that, even though I did think they were annoying, but we're supposed to think they're annoying because we're in our 40s.
Right.
But I get why she didn't think they were annoying. I get why she thought they were so cool.
But the point being, like, when I'm reading it, I was like, I get it. I'm not supposed to like this. This isn't for me, whatever. But I was like, I don't care then. I don't really want to read it. But I did think that she's trying to do everything a certain way, and she opens up her bag, and the rabbit starts talking to her. And at that point, I did enjoy it more, and I liked that she basically was forced into being a superhero, great power, responsibility, blah, blah, blah. I thought from that point it did get a lot better, and her conflict was very real. You know, it's like, you have to do this job. I don't want to do this job, but you have to, and it's the right thing, and the rabbit is there. And again, that's a cutesy, you know, device or whatever, but I thought it was a nice way to do it. And then she comes home, and the cops are there, and I was like, that's not good. And it isn't, and that's, you know, it's a fine plot.
Yeah.
You know,
I thought it was okay. I didn't dislike it. I'm going to read the whole four issues.
Basically, at the beginning, I didn't like it. And at the end, I did. I didn't love it, but I thought it pulled out of something that I thought was going to be one thing and turned to be another.
I've always liked Mary Marvel. I've always liked the Marvel family. Captain Marvel is one of my favorite characters as a kid. I mean, I just need them to give them a fucking name. Like, sure. I get it. We're not calling them Captain Marvel or Mary Marvel anymore, but then you got to call them something.
You know what's funny?
It's like Naomi. They need a name.
It doesn't even occur to me that they're not that anymore, because I just think of it. I'm filling in that blank in my head, so I don't think about it.
I call her Mary Marvel because they're not telling me to call her anything else.
I know, and I did. I was like, oh, that's right. She's Mary Marvel. They're the Marvel family. Like,
she's supposed to look different when she changes, though. Like,
yeah,
she's supposed to change a little bit, like Billy does, you know. Right. But
I think she's more muscly and...
Yeah, but like her hair is still short. I don't know. It's not a huge problem, but it's just... If you're going to keep reintroducing these characters, you got to fix it. Like, I get it. You don't want to use your competition's name, or maybe there's a legal problem. I don't know. But then you got to give me something else to work with here. I'm going to keep calling her Mary Marvel, and I'm not going to call him Shazam. So do something.
No. He's Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
But the thing is, that's headcanon. We'll just go, nope, that's Captain Marvel. That's Mary Marvel. It's fine. We'll do that.
Ratings.
You know, wait.
What?
Doc Shaner is Doc Shaner, and it is a thing of joy. And again, I know that he likes drawing Mary Marvel. Like, he's talked about it forever. It's his book that he wants to work on. It's fine, but I'm still like, why? Just put him on fucking Superman. Put him on Superman. I don't see why that's not a thing. And I keep waiting that one of these projects will be the one, like, oh, we need to put this guy on the big book, and they don't, and I find it annoying. Ratings.
Well, he has been teasing this book for a while on his Instagram, which is why I know it's coming, because he's very excited about it. But yes,
but I also know, like, he's drawn this character, like, just on Instagram or whatever for the longest time. He loves to draw this character.
The visual look is so cool of these characters. Mm-hmm. There really is. And this is much more of a classic looking Mary Marvel. There's no hood. It very much is of the old school variety.
I will say that as a person who I don't think has a lot of comics under their belt and has been a comedy writer and worked for TV, did She-Ra, I guess. When I look at the pages, that's a fuck ton of dialogue. Especially for sort of the first third of it.
Yeah.
But I don't think that I necessarily felt that.
Yeah. No, I didn't think it was overwrought. No.
But you can see it on the page. You're like, oh, slow down. But it was done well enough. Like, her dialogue is strong. Anyway, Ratings.
Third time's the charm. Ratings.
3.5.
I was going to go 3. So 3.5, 3. The Champion Shazam. It didn't blow my socks off, but I enjoyed it. The art's terrific. Check it out if you like the Marvel family, because that's what they are.
Yep. Yeah. I'll read
Patreon. It. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can vote to add a book to the rundown. But every week, we like to give a superpower to a patron who gives it the $5 or higher level. And this week's winner of the superpower is William White. And William White's power, Josh.
I'm listening.
Is that he has complete and utter control over gut bacteria.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's,
you know, like Ant-Man can talk to the ants and sort of help control their movements, and Aquaman can talk to the fish. Well, William can communicate with the gut bacteria, and they listen to his words.
According to more recent science, then, he could fix everything.
Right.
Right. You know what I found out recently?
Uh-huh.
I can't eat ice cream at night.
Old man theater.
Oh, God. Oh, I made a huge mistake.
Well, he could help you with that. He could make your gut bacteria work for you. He can make your bacteria work against you.
Now, granted, this could be evolution saying, hey, asshole, don't eat ice cream at night. It's a bad idea. But the thing is, I don't know when else I can eat it. So because I got some ice cream, I can't eat it during the day because my kids will want it. That's not going to happen.
Sure.
I'm left with night.
That's all you've got is 1 o'clock in the morning.
11 p.m. to 1 a.m. is my time. Now, granted, I'm not eating ice cream that late. That's insane. I'm 45.
We haven't hit that level yet.
No. Yeah. That's a good power. I like that. I like where you're going.
He can really mess you up or help you. And that's what William White can do.
Can I?
Yep.
I'm going to get off this for just 1 second. And I had meant to mention this because you weren't around, I think, when it came out. But this little 3-page tribute to Neil Adams that has been in the back of all the DC books.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to wait for you around. Like, it's fantastic. I love it. I've read it several times. The first time I got to the last page and I fucking cried. Like, not like full on, but I was like, I had a feeling.
Yeah.
And I just thought, this is brilliant, and it's tactful, and it's the right thing, and it's all these great quotes from people, and I just appreciate it.
And his son drew it.
Yep.
Tom King wrote it, his son drew it, and it was really nice, because at first you're like, what is happening? And then it sort of unfolds into this, you know, it's a bunch of comic pros giving him praise, but also in terms of this little art piece in the story that's happening is the characters themselves giving him praise.
And it's all the ones that he, you know, he put his huge stamp on or created.
Yeah, DC. Like, I love this, the final image of them. It's like waiting for him at a con to sign their books, and they're all very excited with their stack of comics. And I just...
Look at Hal and Ollie are just fucking thrilled. Even Batman has a nice smile on.
Yeah, I thought it was really nice. So I mean, there's been, you know, there's really been nice tributes. George Perez did a nice one, and so did Marvel, and it's tough, but that was really, it was one of the better ones.
Neil Adams is top 5.
I think. Oh, yeah, for sure. There's not even a question.
So he deserves it and more.
Patreon.com/iFanboys, where William gave the $5 IR level. Thanks to William, and you can vote there. And let's, you know what, we're long, but fuck it. Let's do an email. I've been gone for 3 weeks. Jason M. I've been thinking about this for about a week now since reading Amazing Spider-Man 900. I know as a reader of mainstream comics for 30 plus years, characters are always going to reset. But seeing Doc Ock back to his one-note, pudgy, bowl haircut, goggle-wearing, villainous ways felt disingenuous and maybe slightly insulting to the years of character work Dan Slott and company put into him. Obviously, Ock was always destined to become a villain again, but I wonder, is there a better way to reset without ignoring everything that came before? Maybe that's the eternal struggle for every mainstream creator. That's a question, not a statement, as I read it. I don't think it's a struggle for the creators. We've talked to them, and they know their job is, and they seem to like the challenge. I think it's a struggle for the reader.
I would be curious. He's a mainstream comic reader for 30 years. That's actually a weird take on it, because I would think that all the other stuff, I mean, like, what is this all this crap? Make Doc Ock again.
Right.
I don't have any of the feelings that he just described.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I see Doc Ock and he doesn't look like that, I'm like, who's this good-looking, nice person? Like, he's such a silly character, and he had such a silly look to begin with. Like, I feel like he's one of those characters that, for me, never felt right when they got away from that too much. The only time that I think it worked actually was in Spider-Man 2. I think that that version of that character where he was a really, you know, brilliant scientist and then the arms kind of made him crazy. I thought that worked really well, but I still want him to look kind of silly. He's a ridiculous character. He's named Dr. Octopus. He has long robot arms he made. He's angry. He's pudgy. How many, like, I want pudgy characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he's in shape, then work for me. Not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that, but take away the specifics of it, and the overall art is that, you know, there's really no way to do this without, at some point, the board has to be reset, and
yes,
that means you have to sort of wipe away what came before, especially if the characters go through big life-changing things. You can keep elements of it. It's interesting because he's a 30-plus year reader, so normally you get this perspective from people who are relatively new to reading comics. I've said this before. I've been reading comics every week since the early 90s, but in some form or another since I can always remember the early 80s. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if my brain is just wired to be okay with it all, but I've never had a problem with it because that's just the way it is. Well, these comics characters are immortal and they're never going to change, and that's fine with me. It's just, I mean, yeah, it sucks, but like, that's the game. The creators, I don't think, have a problem with it. We've been interviewing them since, you know, for over a decade, and they know what their job is.
I mean, take Dr. Octopus and switch him out with Doom. Mm-hmm. Doom has been through the same kind of stuff. We've seen every version of Doom. We saw Doom as a god in the post, whatever that was. You know,
the Hickman thing.
Yep. And
Secret,
seen
whatever.
Doom be, and then after that, Doom became Iron Man. Mm-hmm. And Doom has been pretty again, and he's been evil again. And, you know, he's been Val's godfather, and he's been, you know, in the recent, you know, now he's kind of not good, not evil, you know, still the genius. Like, he's been every version of it. But if I was to open up a comic book tomorrow and it was just classic Doom, mm-hmm. I'd be fine with it. I don't care. And I don't want a story or a writer to be constantly dealing with everything that has happened before. That doesn't work with Spider-Man, and that doesn't work with Batman.
The weight would collapse the entire thing on itself.
And I don't think Doc Ock is even strong enough to hold all that. So you do your thing, you reset to one, you know, when you need to. I don't care. I'm not terribly connected to any of those stories that we're talking
about.
Sure,
but like, so. it's just an example of how DC and Marvel comics work. Of a specific example.
And then the opposite of that is Venom.
Yeah.
And like, they have changed Venom so much from what it originally was that you kind of can't go back to what Venom used to be. And I feel like that's kind of a loss. Like, Venom's not Venom anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He's a different thing.
It's the devil's bargain you make. You enjoy those stories as they come out, and then it's all going to change. You have to be okay with that. And it sucks when something you like gets changed, but when something you don't like gets changed, then you love it.
I think what we're learning here about Jason, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but I think he really liked those Dr. Octopus stories.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I think that's the case. It's like, you remember when Dick Grayson
mm-hmm.
became Batman in those detective comics that Scott Snyder and Jock did? I thought that was great. I remember really, really enjoying that. And then they erased it, because that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take away those other stories, but I'm also glad that we're not dealing with that. I don't want them to talk about that all the time. It'd be exhausting.
Right. And it wasn't erased. It was just reset. It's the same way that like the Dan Slott story still, quote-unquote, happened.
Right. And they're going to refer to it at some point. It's going to be a thing.
But the characters always return to their natures. That's just...
And Doc Ock is flexible enough. And I think if you're a writer or an artist to make comic books, sometimes you're like, I want to use that Dr. Octopus. And I like that they have the freedom to do that.
Right. There's so many different versions. Like this week with Riddler and Killing Time, like for a while he was sort of, they're playing with him as a sort of a quasi good guy. And
he was like a private detective.
That's the kind of the beauty of this, is that you can bring back things later on.
Catwoman.
So Aunt May can get through to Doc Ock and bring out his good nature in a moment of crisis. Like
and listen.
The best writer can play on those pieces that have come before, even if the board's been reset, and tell a meaningful story. But the board's got to be reset. It's got to keep getting reset.
And listen, an older man, his weight's going to fluctuate. Like, he might be good for a while, but chances are he's going to return to his ways at some point. He's going to, at 10 p.m., go, I can use some ice cream right now. It's not going to be a good idea, and it's not going to make your villain suit look good. But
you know, like, that whole series of One Bad Day stories coming out from D.C., like, you could do my One Bad Day story would be the supervillain in his 40s or 50s, has the wrong food on one bad day, and then just blows his whole situation up.
His entire schemes and plans.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have had that celebratory Chinese buffet the night before.
Shouldn't have had the two steaks for breakfast.
What's great is that we have, and we're not like gluttonous men necessarily, I don't think, but we have similar stories about steak, pie, and pizza. We have three Josh and Connor canon stories, and it's not Josh and Connor and Ron and other people, although they were involved in at least one of those.
The pizza
but
one,
you and I together have a pizza, a steak, and a pie story all along those same lines.
All those stories took place in our 20s, just to be fair. Yes. That would never happen. I would never serve you two pies now.
You didn't serve me two pies. You forced two pies on me. You gotta eat these. And like, there was no choice about it. I don't know what to tell you. You gotta eat these pies. And you, listener, might be hearing me say pies. And that's correct. And just to be clear, I'm not talking about a package of pie. I'm talking about two
homemade pies.
Complete full-size pies. And I think we ate them.
We did. We watched Gladiator and some other movies, and we watched Meat Pie, which and it went much better than the steaks did.
Oh, Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the North, father to son.
Jason, I feel you. I feel it. I feel your pain. I understand it. When something you like gets erased, I just can't look at it as disingenuous, and I can't look at it as insulting. It's just the way it works, and the creators know that, especially Dan Slott. Dan Slott definitely knows that. We've had that conversation with him on camera in an interview with him at Jim Hanley's Universe. He's the one that brought the idea of the wacky cosmic button, or the cosmic wacky button that just gets pressed and resets everything. Like, he loves that shit.
And Dan Slott's the guy who gets to do it.
Yeah.
Like, Dan Slott can use the 60s version of any character he wants at any time. I'm cool with it.
Yeah, so it's tough for the readers. It's not tough for the creators, but I feel your pain. Contact at ifanboy.com. That's where you can write in. Like, Jason, if you want to write in for the Media Splode show, put that in the subject line. We love doing those emails. We just did a whole summer mailbag. And thanks for writing in if you did. We have a bunch of shows. We're now starting off, well, is it the first week of August still? Yes, it's still the first week of August. When you're just in your house all the time, you just never know what's going on.
It's so hot.
In July, we had Thor, Love, and Thunder. Josh and I reviewed that film a few weeks ago. And then Josh interviewed Rainbow Rowell and Talksplode. Two super fun shows you can listen to, right? You know, it's not too far back on the feed. Coming up in August, we'll have a Media Splode. Don't know when that's going to come out yet. Don't know what it's going to be about yet. We have some ideas, but we can't put it in a stake in the ground. But there will be a Book Splode, and it will be about Hulk, Future Imperfect. It'll probably come out more towards the end of the month, but we haven't figured that out yet either. And now that Maestro has wrapped up, and I still haven't read that final issue yet, but I need to. That's the book we're going to talk about. It's the final chapter, which is also the first chapter. It's the first and the last chapter of that story. I'm excited to talk about that. We'll have an animated Brain Trust show talking about Green Lantern, Beware My Power, the new animated film from DC's animated original line of films. And also the patron hangout is scheduled for Friday, August 12th. So this coming week. So if you're a patron, pencil it in for Friday, August 12th. And unfortunately, because it's a Friday show, that means no pre-show hangout, which is fine every once in a while. But we just, scheduling-wise, summer's tough. Summer's tough. So this is the way it had to be. So check those things out, those shows, those hangouts. It's a good time.
You can find everything that there is for us to share with you at ifanboy.com. There's all the writing we did. There's links to all of the shows that exist and the videos, and everything is there from our heyday. You can find out what the pick of the week is.
You know, those guys could eat two steaks. No,
those, yeah, you want to talk about what kind of a comic book website a guy can do? Well, can they eat two steaks, two pies, several boxes of pizza? That's the kind of website we're talking about here, and it's a wonder it never really caught on because of those factors. But
didn't really emphasize the steaks. We should have emphasized the steaks more.
I think we did in the
barbecue shows.
In retrospect, I think that if that had been known, it'd be a whole different ballgame. We'd still be flying around in helicopters now and
pizzas. Should have been comics and pizzas.
Follow iFanboy, because the thing is, you can't keep up that kind of eating. And once you slow down there, everything else falls by the wayside with it.
Yeah, yeah. People want to see it like that now. It's just not, I mean, the barbecue show now.
People want that.
Yeah, the barbecue show now, if we ever hit that stretch goal, will not be like the barbecue show of yore, which was done when we were in our early 30s or 30 or late 20s. It'll be like a couple of reasonable pieces of meat on the grill and not 14 pounds of meat.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll see what Ron says.
Maybe the first time it might go overboard, but you know.
Sure. But then, there'll be implications. There'll be ramifications.
there'll be implications.
You can find out what the pick of the week is before by Fanboy. At iFanboy on Twitter, at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. You can follow Connor and I individually and C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/iFanboy. All the videos that we ever did and still have access to are on there now. And we will post this show every week, so you could listen to this show without video on YouTube should you choose to.
See, the thing is, there's some people who don't like that this show is partially becoming two men complaining about being old, but I like it.
And then that's the thing.
Right. I've got the microphone, and you've got the microphone, and
yeah.
So we, you know, what do we like?
If we didn't want to do it, we wouldn't do it. Connor and I are way past the point of being able to tailor this show to what other people like. And so the only thing that's going to happen now is I'm going to try to make this man laugh and not sound stupid when I talk about comics.
And hopefully you laugh in the process.
Yes, that's the deal.
Yeah, because what are you going to do? We're getting old and things hurt. Can't eat like we used to.
It's foremost on the mind.
It's top of mind, kids.
On our glory days, apparently, are extremely unimpressive. They have to do with two steaks. Like Al Bundy, the Polk High School, four touchdowns in one game.
I think
so
about...
So you're saying we ate the two steaks in the morning and then drove to San Diego for a day of activity.
Yes, and I think we tried to go to In-N-Out Burger, but
Stop? Did we go to the bathroom on the way?
I think we had to stop.
Okay, I would hope so.
I think we did. And you know what? Just to prove this isn't a show bit, just the other day I was thinking about how, because I think, I don't know why it came up, but I was thinking about pizza. Well, there's no reason why. Pizza just always
come on
my mind. But I was thinking about the fact that in my, you know, early 20s in college, I could take down a large New York City pizza by myself, no problems. Like, holy no God. Questions, no problems. But now, forget it. Forget it. It's over.
Forget it.
Hey, if you like this show, if you like to talk about comic books and not being able to do things you used to be able to do and being old, and food, consider leaving a review or star rating on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. I understand some of those reviews won't be good. They'll say this show is a shadow of what it used to be.
It's not the only thing.
That's just your opinion.
Man.
And so is my eating habits, the shadow of what they used to be. But I don't know where I'm going anymore. You can tell your friends. Word of mouth is great. When someone's delivering you a pizza, you can tell them too. You know, I always like to tell my pizza delivery guy all about the shows I'm listening to and watching. He loves it.
I think you're
actually the local pizza place just told me they are not delivering anymore because of shortages of workforce. They're only delivering in the off hours. I was like, well, that's fun.
Understood.
What am I supposed to do now?
All right, we got to stop.
Less pizza?
We got to. You're going to go off. It's not going to. This is all your edit problem to deal with too.
Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Thank you. Snake Farm. It just sounds nasty. Snake Farm. It pretty much is. Snake Farm. It's a reptile. Snake Farm. Snake Farm. It just sounds nasty. Snake Farm. It pretty much is. Snake Farm. It's a reptile. Snake Farm.